This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. Sound the gifting panic alarm. We've all been there. You need to find the perfect gift. You have absolutely zero ideas, and you don't know where to start. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. Just answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like, and Gift Mode gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Imagine pages of artisan espresso mugs for the coffee connoisseur in your life. Or for the pickleballer, customized paddle covers in every shade imaginable. Etsy's got you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What are the stakes between the U.S. and China right now? There are few places better than the Western Pacific on board the aircraft carrier USS Nimitz to find out.
Is the U.S. Navy ready?
We're ready, yes. I'll never admit to being ready enough.
Tonight, the commander of the United States Pacific Fleet talks about the state of the U.S. Navy, China's growing fleet, and new long-range missile systems. And what our Top Gun pilots are seeing in the sky.
How aggressive has China become in the air?
Aggressive.
Is it your hope that the power of the U.S. Navy, the force posture of the U.S. Navy, will deter a Chinese invasion of Taiwan?
It's not my hope, it's my duty.
Rocco Commisso doesn't suffer fools. But like most Italian soccer fans, he does suffer. 4 years ago, he bought the team in Florence, where game day is filled with more agony and ecstasy than a Puccini opera. When Commisso bought ACF Fiorentina, it ticked two boxes. First, it was a bargain for a European club. Second, it met the demand by his wife that if he insisted on buying a team, it had to be someplace nice.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Bill Whitaker.
I'm Sharon Alfonsi.
I'm John Wertheim.
I'm Cecilia Vega.
I'm Nora O'Donnell.
I'm Scott Pelley. Those stories tonight on 60 Minutes.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The United States Navy helped secure victory in two world wars and the Cold War. Today, the Navy remains a formidable fighting force, but even officers within the service have questioned its readiness. While the U.S. spent 20 years fighting land wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the Pentagon watched China, its greatest geopolitical rival of the 21st century, build the largest navy in the world. China has threatened to use that navy to invade Taiwan, an important American ally. As tensions with China continue to rise, we wanted to know more about the current state of the U.S. Navy, how it's trying to deter China, and as we first reported in March, preparing for the possibility of war.
The Navy's always on alert. One third of the Navy is always deployed and operating at all times. The Navy's mustering right now about 300 ships, and there are about 100 ships at sea right now all around the globe.
Admiral Samuel Paparo commands the U.S. Pacific Fleet, whose 200 ships and 150,000 sailors and civilians make up 60% of the entire U.S. Navy. We met him in February on the aircraft carrier USS Nimitz, deployed near the U.S. territory of Guam, southeast of Taiwan and the People's Republic of China, or PRC.
You've been operating as a naval officer for 40 years. How has operating in the Western Pacific changed?
In the early 2000s, the PRC Navy mustered about 37 vessels. Today, they're mustering 350 vessels.
In March, China's new foreign minister, Qin Gong, delivered a stern warning to the U.S. He said that if Washington does not change course in its stance towards China, conflict and confrontation is inevitable. This past August, when then-Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi became the most senior U.S. political figure to visit Taiwan in 25 years, China called it a blatant provocation. The People's Liberation Army fired ballistic missiles into the sea around Taiwan and encircled the island with aircraft and warships.
So are Chinese warships now operating closer to Taiwan after Nancy Pelosi's visit?
Yes.
The best guess anyone has about China's ultimate intentions for Taiwan comes from the CIA. According to its intelligence assessment, China's President Xi Jinping has ordered the People's Liberation Army to be prepared to take back the island by force by 2027.
And if China invades Taiwan, what will the U.S. Navy do?
It's a decision of the President of the United States and a decision of the Congress. It's our duty to be ready for that. But the bulk of the United States Navy will be deployed rapidly to the Western Pacific to come to the aid of Taiwan if the order comes to aid Taiwan in thwarting that invasion.
Is the U.S. Navy ready?
We're ready, yes. I'll never admit to being ready enough.
Yes.
President Biden has declared four times, including on 60 Minutes, that the U.S. military would defend Taiwan, which is a democracy and the world's leading producer of advanced microchips. To reach the USS Nimitz, we first traveled to America's westernmost territory, the island of Guam, in the middle of the Pacific. Guam was taken by Imperial Japan 2 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941. U.S. Marines recaptured it 2.5 years later, and the island, about the size of Chicago, became an indispensable strategic foothold in the Western Pacific, as it remains today. From Guam, we boarded a Navy C-2 Greyhound. The Cold War-era transport plane takes people and supplies back and forth from land to the carrier. It was a short flight to the ship and an even shorter landing.
Incredible.
First COD landing?
Yes.
Oh, very nice.
Certain operations.
Before Admiral Paparo rose to lead the Pacific Fleet, he flew jets and graduated from the school known as Top Gun.
When you talk about ships, what's the most powerful in the U.S. Navy?
It's an aircraft carrier. and its air wing is capable of 150 strike or air-to-air sorties per day, with at its surge levels, the ability to deliver 900 precision-guided munitions every day and reloadable every night.
So even though China now has the largest navy in the world, they don't have anything like this in terms of aircraft carriers.
They do not, but they're working towards it. And they have two operational aircraft carriers right now.
That's China's two diesel-fueled carriers to the U.S.'s 11 nuclear-powered ones that can carry a total of about 1,000 attack aircraft, more than the navies of every other nation on Earth combined.
I'll tell you this, we are here to stay, right, in the South China Sea and in this part of the world. And I think that's the message that we really want to convey to not only China, but the entire world. We will sail wherever international law allows.
Lieutenant Commander David Ash flies an FA-18.
Do you get briefed on China's growing military threat and the progress that their Navy is making?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely we do. And they are making great progress in a lot of key areas.
The Chinese
are, from a military standpoint.
This video from Weapons Systems Officer Lieutenant Commander Matthew Carlton shows his FA-18 strafing ground targets with a machine gun on a U.S. weapons range near Guam. The pilots on the Nimitz also conduct air-to-air combat, or dogfighting drills, daily.
How aggressive has China become in the air?
Aggressive. And just some examples include unsafe, unprofessional intercepts where they move within single digits of feet of other aircraft, flashing the weapons that they have on board to the aircrew of the other aircraft, operating in international airspace, maneuvering their aircraft in such a way that denies the ability to turn in one direction. If they're safe and professional, then there's no problem. Everybody has the right to fly and sail wherever international law dictates.
But the Chinese are pushing that.
They are pushing it.
China's increasingly aggressive moves in the Western Pacific, encroaching on territory, illegal fishing, and building bases in the middle of the South China Sea, have pushed nations like Japan and the Philippines to forge closer military ties to the U.S. And earlier this year, Britain, the U.S., and Australia signed a landmark deal to jointly develop nuclear-powered attack submarines to patrol the Pacific. This is how China and Taiwan appear on most maps. This is how the Chinese Communist Party sees the Western Pacific, including the South and East China Seas from Beijing. Taiwan is the fulcrum in what China's leaders call the First Island Chain, a constellation of U.S. allies that stretches across its entire coast. Control of Taiwan is the strategic key to unlocking direct access to the Pacific and the sea lanes where about 50% of the world's commerce gets transported.
China has accused the United States of trying to contain them. What do you say to China?
I would say, do you need to be contained? Are you expanding? Are you an expansionist power? To a very great extent, the United States was the champion for China's rise. And in no way are we seeking to contain China. What we are seeking for them to play by the rules.
China's Navy, a branch of the People's Liberation Army, is now the world's largest. China is also using its 9,000-mile coastline to rewrite the rules of fighting at sea, as these images from Chinese state media show. Its military has invested heavily in long-range precision-guided weapons, like the DF-21 and DF-26, that can be used to target ships. China's People's Liberation Army Rocket Force calls them carrier killers and has practiced shooting them at mock-ups of American ships in the desert that look a lot like the Nimitz.
Since the United States has been operating in the Western Pacific, China's backyard, they've been developing missiles to attack our assets, haven't they? Specific missiles.
Absolutely, yes. First, I'll say the United States is also a Western Pacific nation. So
Guam.
It's not China's backyard. It's You know, it is a free and open Indo-Pacific that encompasses numerous partners and treaty allies. And yes, we have seen them greatly enhance their power projection capability.
How much do you worry about the PLA rocket force?
I worry, you know, I'd be a fool to not worry about it. Of course I worry about the PLA rocket force. Of course I work every single day to develop the tactics and the techniques and the procedures to counter it and to continue to develop the systems that can also defend against them.
About how far are we from mainland China?
1,500 nautical miles.
They can hit us.
Yes, they can. If they've got the targeting in place, they could hit this aircraft carrier. If I don't want to be hit, there's something I can do about it.
U.S. Navy planners aren't just plotting how to evade China's rocket force, but also how they could effectively fight back. From the vicinity of Guam, none of the aircraft on this ship has the range to approach Taiwan without refueling in the air. Ships like the U.S. destroyer Wayne E. Meyer, part of the Nimitz strike group, would need to sail much closer towards China to fire their missiles at any force invading Taiwan. One naval scholar we spoke to likened it to a boxing match in which a fighter, in this case China, has much longer arms than their potential opponent, the U.S.
I'll give you a lot of examples where a shorter fighter was able to prevail over a long-armed fighter by being on their toes, by maneuvering. And we can also stick and move while we're developing those longer-range weapons.
There is another area of modern naval warfare where the U.S. had a head start and retains a deep advantage over China.
I just noticed out of the corner of my eye.
This is a 688 class, a Los Angeles class attack submarine. This is the most capable submarine on the planet. You know, with the exception of the Virginia class, our newer class of submarines.
The exact number is classified, but our best estimate is that there are about a dozen nuclear-powered fast attack submarines patrolling the Pacific at any time. They are difficult to detect and track, something China is trying to solve.
How much more advanced is U.S. submarine technology than Chinese capability?
A generation.
Generation.
And by generation, think 10 or 20 years. But broadly, I don't really talk in depth about submarine capabilities. It's the silent service.
Since Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, China's military leaders have themselves been mostly silent and ignored efforts by the U.S. military to keep the lines of communication open. Even when a Chinese spy balloon breached American airspace and was shot down by the U.S.
If the U.S. and Chinese militaries can't communicate over a Chinese spy balloon, then what's going to happen when there's a real crisis in the South China Sea or with Taiwan?
We'll hope that they'll answer the phone. Else, we'll do our very best assessment based on the things that they say in open source and based on their behavior to divine their intentions, and we'll act accordingly.
Doesn't that make the situation even more dangerous if U.S. and Chinese militaries are not talking?
Yes.
Several sources within the Pentagon tell 60 Minutes that if China invaded Taiwan, it could very well kick off in outer space, with both sides targeting the other's satellites that enable precision-guided weaponry. Cyber attacks on American cities and the sabotage of ports on the west coast of the U.S. mainland could follow.
One recent non-classified war game had the U.S. prevailing but losing 20 ships, including two carriers. Does that sound about right?
That is a plausible outcome. I can imagine a more pessimistic outcome, and I can imagine a more optimistic outcome. We should be clear-eyed about the costs that we're potentially incurring.
There are about 5,000 Americans on board the Nimitz. The ship is nearly half a century old. Given the Navy's current needs in the Pacific, and because there's fuel left in its nuclear reactors, the carrier's life at sea is going to be extended.
Is it your hope that the power of the U.S. Navy, the force posture of the U.S. Navy, will deter a Chinese invasion of Taiwan?
It's not my hope, it's my duty, in conjunction with allies and partners, to deliver intolerable costs
to anybody that would upend the order in violation of the nation's security or in violation of the nation's interests. The saying, which is si pacem para bellum, which is if you want peace, prepare for war.
Since our story first aired in March, China has intensified its aggressive military tactics in the Western Pacific. In June, a Chinese warship nearly collided with a U.S. destroyer in the Taiwan Strait. When we return, critical questions about the state of the U.S. Navy and its readiness.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
60 Minutes spent months talking to current and former naval officers, military strategists, and politicians about the state of the U.S. Navy. One common thread in our reporting is unease, both about the size of the U.S. fleet and its readiness to fight. The Navy's ships are being retired faster than they're getting replaced, while the Navy of the People's Republic of China, or PRC, grows larger and more lethal by the year. We first asked the commander of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, Admiral Samuel Paparo, about this on our visit earlier this year to the USS Nimitz, the oldest aircraft carrier in the Navy.
We call it the decade of concern. We've seen a tenfold increase in the size of the PRC Navy.
Technically speaking, the Chinese now have the largest Navy in the world in terms of number of ships, correct?
Yes.
Do the numbers matter?
Yes. As the saying goes, quantity has a quality all its own.
At some point, are they going to reach numbers that we can't prevail over?
I'm not comfortable with the trajectory.
If you look at a map of the Indo-Pacific, one thing becomes clear. There's a lot of water on that map. And so ours has to be a maritime strategy.
Republican Mike Gallagher and Democrat Elaine Loria served together on the House Armed Services Committee in the last Congress.
What is it about the U.S. Navy that has allowed the two of you to find common cause?
I think we share a sense of the urgency of the moment. We see increasing threats from China in particular in the Indo-Pacific. We feel like we're not moving fast enough to build a bigger Navy.
Congressman Gallagher is a Marine veteran who represents Green Bay, Wisconsin. He chairs the new House Committee on China. He's concerned that under the Navy's current plan, the fleet will shrink to about 280 ships by 2027, the same year the CIA says China has set for having the capability to take Taiwan by force.
So we will be weakest when our enemy is potentially strongest.
China's increased rhetoric and potential aggression against Taiwan, we're going to have to be ready to respond today with the forces we have today.
Former Congresswoman Elaine Loria represented Virginia Beach until this past January. An Annapolis graduate, Loria had a 20-year naval career before being elected to Congress.
What would you say the state of the U.S. Navy is today?
I think the Navy has not received the attention and resources that it needs over two decades. I mean, I served on six different ships. Every single one of those ships was either built during or a product of the fleet that was built in the Cold War.
Both Mike Gallagher and Elaine Loria have lobbied for government money for the shipyards in or near their districts. But they say this is less about jobs and more about national security.
If we don't get this right, all of these other things we're doing in Congress, ultimately that might not matter.
If you think about what a coherent grand strategy vis-a-vis China would be, hard power would be the most important part of that, and the Navy would be the most important component of your hard power investments.
Over the last two decades, the Navy spent $55 billion on two investments that did not pan out. The first was a class of destroyers known as the Zumwalt. The futuristic fighting ships were supposed to revolutionize naval warfare. 32 were ordered, but only three were ever launched. The cost of each ship, by one estimate, was upwards of $8 billion, making them the three most expensive destroyers ever put to sea. Another example is the Littoral Combat Ship, or LCS, designed to be a fast, all-purpose warship for shallow waters. $30 billion later, the program ran aground after structural defects and engine trouble. Within the Navy, the LCS earned the unfortunate nickname Little Crappy Ship.
The Navy's last few decades have been described as a lost generation of shipbuilding. Is that overly dramatic?
I don't think so. We're still struggling to build ships on time, on budget, and that's something we absolutely need to fix going forward.
This past March, we spoke with Admiral Mike Gilday at the Pentagon. He is the chief of naval operations and is responsible for building, maintaining, and equipping the entire U.S. Navy.
Is the Navy in crisis?
No. The Navy's not in crisis. The Navy is out on point every single day.
Is it being outpaced by China?
No. Our Navy's still in a position to prevail. But that's not blind confidence. We are concerned with the trajectory that China's on, with China's behavior. But we are in a good position right now if we did ever get into a fight against them.
How would you describe what China has been able to do militarily over the last 20 years?
The most alarming thing is the growth of not only their conventional forces, but also their strategic nuclear forces, their cyber capability, their space capability, and how they are using that to force other nations' navies out of certain areas in the South China Sea. Instead of recognizing international law, they want to control where those goods flow and how.
What lessons did the U.S. Navy learn from some of the shipbuilding mistakes of the last 20 years?
I think one of the things that we learned was that we need to have the design well in place before we begin bending metal. And so we are going back to the past, to what we did in the 80s and the 90s. The Navy has the lead.
There is a tendency among the great powers to look at each other's naval buildups with deep suspicion.
Toshi Yoshihara of the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments may know more than any scholar in the West about China's Navy.
China will have about 440 ships by 2030, and that's according to the Pentagon.
Why is China able to build more warships more quickly than the U.S.?
China has clearly invested in this defense industrial infrastructure to produce these ships, which allows them to produce multiple ships simultaneously, essentially outbuilding many of the Western navies combined.
China's navy piggybacks on a booming commercial shipbuilding industry, kept afloat by generous state subsidies, inexpensive materials, and cheap labor. In the United States, it's a different story. After the Cold War ended, the shipbuilding industry consolidated, and many of the yards where ships were both built and maintained closed down.
What do you see when you see China's shipbuilding program?
It's very robust.
Do we have enough shipyards?
No. I wish that we had more commercial shipyards. Over my career, we've gone from more than 30 shipyards down to about 7 that we rely upon on a day-to-day basis to build ships.
One of those yards is run by Huntington Ingalls Industries, which built the state-of-the-art new Ford-class aircraft carrier. After controlled explosions in 2021 to prove it could withstand combat, the Ford got closer to deployment, 6 years late and billions of dollars over budget. The Navy's not just struggling to build new ships on time. According to the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, there's a multi-year backlog repairing the ships in the fleet.
Our maintenance backlog is one of the primary things that I'm working on to correct. So just 3 years ago, we had 7,700 delay days, that is extra days in a shipyard by ships when they weren't operational. We have cut that down to 3,000. We are not satisfied.
Maintenance delays mean sailors can't come home.
because the ship that's supposed to replace them is not ready. It means longer deployments. It means away from your family more. That's a big strain on the workforce.
The more ships that we can have available to send at sea alleviates many of those problems that you pointed out. Sailors join the Navy to see the world, and so it's my job to make sure that those maintenance delays go to zero and we can get those ships to sea as quickly as possible.
In the last year alone, at least 10 sailors assigned to ships undergoing maintenance or working at maintenance facilities have died by suicide.
It is a problem that we're taking very, very seriously. And down to every leader in our Navy, everybody has a responsibility to look out for each other, take care of each other. There is no wrong door to knock on when you need help.
Admiral Gilday says the U.S. Navy's main advantage over China is America's sailors. His goal is to modernize the U.S. fleet and have those sailors serving alongside hundreds of unmanned vessels by 2045.
I think unmanned is the future. And so I think that some 40% of our fleet in the future, I believe, is going to be unmanned.
Are these like underwater drones?
Some of them are highly capable of delivering mines and perhaps other types of weapons.
Admiral Gilday is talking about the Orca, an extra-large, unmanned undersea vehicle.
Can you say what it will do, or is that classified?
Well, at a minimum, it'll have a clandestine mine-laying capability. So it'll be done in a way that is very secretive, but very effective.
But the GAO reports that it's already $250 million over budget and 3 years behind schedule.
That particular platform is behind schedule. It's the first of a kind. When it delivers, I see a very high return on investment from that particular platform.
Because?
Because it will be among the most lethal and stealthy platforms in the arsenal of the U.S. military.
The Navy's total budget request for fiscal year 2024 is over $250 billion. An $11 billion increase from last year. The focus is on China.
The U.S. defense posture is viewed as aggressive by the Chinese. The foreign minister just said, look, stop the containment. This may lead to conflict.
Perhaps the Chinese minister doesn't like the fact that the U.S. Navy is operating in collaboration with dozens of navies around the world to ensure that the maritime commons remains free and open for all nations. The Chinese want to dictate those terms, and so they don't like our presence. But our presence is not intended to be provocative. It's intended to assure and to reassure allies and partners around the world that those sea lanes do remain open. The global economy literally floats on seawater.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Tonight, we're going to tell you one of those Only in America stories, but this one begins and ends on the other side of the Atlantic. Rocco Camiso was 12 years old when his family moved to the United States from southern Italy. With the hustle he learned on the streets of the Bronx and exceptional timing, Camiso built a cable TV empire and a net worth of $8 billion. So what did he do with his Made in the USA fortune? Rocco Camiso returned to the land of his birth, and as we reported in March, he bought a pro soccer team.
You've described yourself as a hustler. What does that mean?
Well, always in the good sense of a hustler.
because it could have a terrible sense, right? A hustler is never, you know, always try to find a way to achieve a certain objective. Hustle, hustle. Don't give up. Don't take no for an answer.
I've heard that you have no tolerance for people you call spinners.
Right.
What's a spinner?
Spinner is a bullshit artist. I know plenty of those guys. I have a pretty good idea who the hell I'm dealing with.
Did you learn that in the Bronx?
No, my mother gave it to me when I was born.
Rocco Commisso doesn't suffer fools. But like most Italian soccer fans, he does suffer. 4 years ago, he bought the team in Florence, where game day is filled with more agony and ecstasy than a Puccini opera. We watched as the city's diehard fans, called the Tifosi, endured a collective 90-minute-long breakdown.
I don't speak Italian, but I think I know what they're saying.
Commisso, who is 73, knows the Tifosi follow his reactions. So he tries to keep a poker face as he chews wads of nicotine gum.
How many of these do you go through?
A game. About 15, 20.
15, 20. Depends on the game, right?
Yeah.
When Commisso bought Fiorentina, it ticked two boxes. First, the $170 million price was a bargain for a European club. Second, it met the demand by his wife that if he insisted on buying a team, it had to be someplace nice.
When I landed in Florence, outside the airport, there were a mass of people there. And the first words that I used, chiamatemi Rocco, call me Rocco. Because over here, titles are very important. I said, I don't need titles. You don't have to call me Mister. Just call me Rocco. And today, they call me Rocco.
Fiorentina, which is nicknamed La Viola, or the Purple, has not won a league championship since 1969. The Tifosi got sick of waiting and ran the previous owner out of town.
The Tifo, the fans, first, they're everything. But they could be nasty if you don't win.
The highs are high and the lows are low, it seems like.
But they can't kick Rocco out of here. You know, they think they're going to criticize him and kick me out. No, that can't happen. Rocco's a little different.
How are you different?
First of all, there's not been anyone here that's put in the money that I put in a short period of time. And I go back to the Medicis from 500 years ago. If I lose 500 million, 400 million, I'm not going to go and wash the dishes again the way I did when I was a young man. So watch out what you do, because you don't know what's going to come next.
Rocco Commisso's journey to the owner's box in Florence began here by the subway in the Bronx. His father, a carpenter, and his older brother came to the U.S. in the 50s to escape poverty. A few years later, they sent for Rocco, his mother, and two sisters.
When we came here in 63, my brother bought the house. God bless him. And this was like a luxury to us. And we lived upstairs on the second floor.
Commisso's English was terrible, but he played a mean accordion. So at age 13, he cut his first deal. Rocco agreed to perform for free at a Bronx theater if the manager helped get him into the Catholic all-boys high school, Mount St. Michael Academy. It is still a launching pad for young men from immigrant families.
Even though I had not taken the test to get in, I asked the manager to please send a recommendation letter. He did, and they admitted me.
So you never took the test, but did you have to play the accordion?
They didn't let me play the accordion. The band did not have the accordion.
Okay. But just on your accordion skills alone, you were given entrance?
I got lucky.
Yeah.
Or hustled, whichever way you want to call it.
He kept hustling. Every day before and after school, he worked at his family's luncheonette near the subway station to pay his high school tuition.
So I used to get paid $1 an hour. And through that $1 an hour, I paid 4 years of Mount St. Michael schooling. Now, it didn't cost a lot of money then, but it was still something.
Commisso wanted to be an engineer, but a dollar an hour wasn't going to pay for college.
So Camiso hunted down a scholarship for a sport he always loved, soccer. Never mind that his high school didn't have a team and he'd not played much since coming to America.
And somehow you end up with a soccer scholarship to Columbia. How does that happen?
Hustle. I needed money to go to school. So I asked the gym teacher to go and call the NYU coach. The NYU coach puts me in the American Czechoslovak team in the German-American League, sees me play 6 games, says, yeah, I like the kid, so let me help him get into NYU, which he did, and they gave me 50% scholarship, but that was not enough. So I then told the gym teacher, go and call the coach at Columbia now. In the space of 3 to 4 weeks, they give me admissions to Columbia, and a full scholarship.
Had they seen you play?
No. I asked that question after they admitted me. I said, but let me ask you, you give me all this money and you don't want to see me play? I said, Rocco, if you're good enough for NYU, you're good enough for Columbia.
Camiso became team captain and led Columbia to its first NCAA tournament. After graduation and an MBA, he made his way to Wall Street. At night, though, he was helping his brother run a disco. Rival clubs played the Bee Gees, but not Camiso. He chose to play pop music from Italy.
I was really into Italian music and came up with this idea that by specializing in something as opposed to being just like anybody else, you know, we could do well. And nobody could touch us in terms of the competition because nobody had it.
Camiso became an executive in the cable TV industry just as it exploded. Then in 1995, he decided it was time to start a business he named Mediacom. Like the disco, he designed a plan to seize an opportunity others had missed.
It was an 8-page paper that talked about what I foresee in terms of the cable business.
What did you foresee?
And what I foresaw is the fact that sooner or later, we're going to get deregulated, and there's a great opportunity to do well in the smaller markets of the U.S., the rural markets, largely because nobody wanted them.
Rocco Camiso believed those small markets hid buried treasure, 600,000 miles of cable used to carry computer data through places such as the Corn Belt and Deep South. He risked his life savings to buy up the small systems. Again, timing and luck were on his side. Today, Mediacom provides broadband in 22 states, and Rocco Camiso's net worth is $8 billion. It's a private company. Catherine Camiso, Rocco's wife of 47 years, works there. So does his sister, Italia, and his son, Joe, on the left. Outside Mediacom headquarters in upstate New York is a bocce court. Inside, espresso flows. Camiso told us he had a streak of 25 years of profits and has never laid off workers.
I have heard so many people say, it's not personal, it's business.
That's crap. You know, I think the personal, frankly, has a lot to do with why companies fail or succeed. Unfortunately, there's no one like me in our business. And I'm talking about the media, newspapers. But I hate to destroy people's lives because I have to go in and make an extra $1 million.
Camiso made a point to us that he does not own a yacht, a mansion on the beach, or a private jet. Of course, we had to point out he did buy an Italian soccer team.
When I came here, I used 3 things. Fast, fast, fast. That the cost will be okay, you know, within my means. And control, control, control. I control or no money from Rocco. That's the way it works.
What's harder, running a company like Mediacom or running
this
a soccer team?
This is significantly more difficult. I get more criticism here than in 1,500 communities in the U.S.
Forza grande, Fiorentina!
The American owner is under relentless scrutiny by Fiorentina fans who demand that he shells out whatever it costs to bring in stars and end their 50-year championship drought. Then there's been times when he's lost it with the unforgiving Italian press.
Have you ever thought, what have I done? What did I get myself into?
No.
It's a lot of aggravation.
But that's not me. No, I made the decision. I'm going to stick with the decision.
True to Rocco's way, he's playing the long game. by spending $100 million on this. It's called Viola Park. The Commisos showed us around what will be one of the largest soccer facilities in Europe for developing young male and female players. But this is Italy.
You see that opening there where you have the two Vs?
Yes.
Right in the middle? We had to break the building apart because there's a Roman wall there. Rocks.
Stop it. You hit a Roman wall?
Yeah. But so we had to uncover it, cover it up, but break the build. We could not build on top of the Roman wall.
Despite the agita and a so-so season, Rocco Commiso still seems to love this business. He's become one of the most famous Americans in Italy and adores his players. Some who look like Michelangelo himself may have carved them out of marble.
My job is to hug them, kiss them, put my arms around them, and hope that they do better the next time.
No tough talk?
You know, they get the message indirectly, you know, that things got to change here.
How do they get the message?
They get the message. Never mind.
And if you're wondering if Commiso still plays a mean accordion, here's your answer. Our visit to Florence ended with dinner and a serenade by the billionaire from the Bronx.
Do you think if you had stayed in Italy, you'd have been able to achieve the success that you have today?
No way. This is truly the land of opportunity. He gave this poor soul, okay, yeah, the opportunity to become something, somebody. And that's the beauty about America.
You still believe in the American dream?
Absolutely, yeah. This is the last hope in the world. But Mom provided me a phenomenal education.
Rocco Commiso has given millions to his alma maters and has contributed to scholarships for nearly 3,000 students across the U.S., including many first-generation immigrants like him.
I just want to be known as the guy that nothing, success never changed him.
Just Rocco.
Just Rocco.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sharon Alfonsi. We'll be back next week with another edition of 60 Minutes.
Some puzzles are hard to solve. Others are hard to prove. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts. Access episodes early and ad-free with 48 Hours Plus on Apple Podcasts.
We're in Rome to meet Pope Francis for a rare, wide-ranging interview.
Do you like when you are called the people's pope?
El Papa de la gente.
It is very important to talk about the future. You have called for a ceasefire. Can you help negotiate peace?
Join us for our special hour with His Holiness on CBS.
Pope Francis the First, a CBS News primetime special, tomorrow on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.